This morning, America's First News starts right after this. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Downward pressure on the workforce. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Final weekend of January. Glad you're with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
American workers are in a catch-22. Millions are homesick with Omicron. Others are showing up to the job while ill. Hear how those factors weigh on employers.
If you're snowed in this weekend, do you know the etiquette rules for a snowblower? We'll have funny tips on how not to be a jerk.
On the tech front, an explainer about non-fungible tokens, the unique digital assets that create bragging rights and possibly wealth.
And can this weekend's schedule of NFL playoff games be as good for business as last weekend's classics?
Basically, all the stars aligned, great games, thrillers, big TV audiences, and that's exactly what the networks and the NFL and the advertisers who spend all the money want to see.
Bill Shea at The Athletic on the math behind big ratings for an epic weekend of football. Well, the Omicron wave of coronavirus cases is weighing on the U.S. labor force, keeping millions of people home sick while others say they're working through illnesses. More on the impact on business and staffers from economics reporter Harriet Torrey at The Wall Street Journal. Harriet, your findings.
Yeah, I mean, we're just seeing this really big share of people who are out sick and are calling in sick. And this is clearly a big problem for all kinds of different businesses. You know, manufacturers are having problems with production lines. We see a lot of hospitals that are really struggling because they have a lot of healthcare workers out sick. It's a big problem. A lot of restaurants, bars, you know, people are having to cut their hours. You might have noticed like your local coffee shop is closing early because they just don't have people to man those shifts. And it's a big problem. It's a big problem for businesses who are making less money. And it's often a problem for workers because so many of them don't have paid sick leave. You know, the access to a paid sick day really depends on the job, the kind of job that you have. If you're, if you're in a high skilled competitive industry, you likely do have a lot of sick days. But unfortunately for a lot of people working in the services sector, maybe 4 out of 10 people, they can't take a single sick day paid. So they face this big conundrum. Do I come into work sick and risk spreading the virus to other people, to customers and coworkers, or do I stay at home and not get paid?
Yeah. Is there a reasonable guess as to how many people have or are calling out sick?
Well, the Census Bureau does a survey every couple of weeks. It's called the Pulse Survey, and they quiz people on, you know, whether they were out of work in that particular week. And we saw in the most recent week that we had 8.8 million people out sick, and that was by far and away the highest level we've seen of that since they started doing the survey, which was in the middle of 2020. And so some people just say, you know, they ask people the reasons why they're out sick. And usually it's either they were sick themselves or they had to care for someone who was sick with coronavirus symptoms. And there's also a lot of people who are out because they're, you know, there's another five million people who are caring for children who are not in school or daycare. You know, we've got, because of Omicron, some schools have had to go virtual again. Sometimes daycares, they have to shut down for a couple of weeks if they get a lot of positive cases. So this is another factor that's keeping people out of the labor force, is that they have other people in their household that they have to take care of.
Yeah. We're speaking with Harriet Torrey, economics reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Omicron Wave Drives Surge of Workers Calling in Sick and Working Through Illness. So that said, it in some ways, is the good news here that we think this is temporary?
Yes, that is what economists say. Hopefully, you know, we are seeing signs in terms of Omicron infections that we've seen the peak in places like DC and places like New York, and cases are starting to taper off there. That's not the case in the South and the Southwest. You know, this, the virus is definitely still raging there. But the hope is that this the nationwide cases might peak in, you know, the next couple of weeks and start to go down. So in terms of long-term damage to the labor market, economists don't really think that that will be the case. You know, we are definitely seeing some immediate effects. We've that it's expected that perhaps the labor, you know, the payrolls report for January will take a hit from Omicron. We're already seeing this in PMI's data for manufacturing firms, that Omicron is having a big effect. But the hope is that this will be, you know, a temporary blip. And of course, another thing that economists and sociologists say is that every successive wave of the virus that we see tends to do less damage, purely because people are just getting better at dealing with it. You know, they people are sort of working, finding ways to work around it. Like, you know, perhaps that they can work from home more, or they've just, you know, they've managed to kind of like find ways to get all their groceries delivered and try and keep life going as much as possible, keep businesses open as much as possible, even though a lot of people are getting sick.
Finish up, if you would, just a stat that stood out to me. The 1/3 of current retirees did so, at least in part, because they feared getting sick.
Yeah, this was another point that came up in the shift data. Well, this is people who retired earlier than they expected.
Okay.
So they retired recently. They weren't expecting to retire. But of these people who retired earlier than they had planned to, the reason that they said that they retired or they weren't coming back into the labor force is because they're scared of getting sick.
Thanks, Harriet. Harriet Torrey, reporter on economics at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, the best foods for an energy boost. The way you use the internet has changed dramatically over the last decade, but security tools for the most part have stayed the same. Between your photos, finances, devices, and connections, your world is more online than ever. Aura provides complete digital security all in one easy-to-use app. Aura protects you from the worst of the internet so you can still enjoy the best of it with digital security protection to keep your online finances, personal info, and tech safe from threats. It gives me peace of mind to know Aura protects me from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and so much more with one simple subscription. All plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds, and experienced U.S.-based customer support is ready to help. For a limited time, Aura is offering our listeners a 30-day free trial when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get complete protection, huge savings, and a 30-day free trial. That's A-U-R-A, aura.com/Gordon. Aura, the new standard in digital security. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. You feel sluggish and are tired of winter already. Is there a way to supercharge your energy and fight off the bleakness? Guidance from nutrition expert and health coach Asha Paul, author of the new book, The Wholeness Cookbook. Asha, we may need a little help after the holidays.
You definitely want to get back on track, Gordon. And a great way is if you are used to a lot of caffeine and sugar, an alternative way may be to start, you know, slowly. Definitely you want to check in with your doctor to make sure this works for you. And a good trick is to start your day with wholesome, natural foods rather than fake foods. So when you are filled up with nutritious food that can keep you full and satisfied, half the battle is won, you see. And another trick would be for you to keep a stash of healthy snacks at home or as well as at workspace. And these could be dark chocolates, raw seeds and nuts such as pumpkin seeds, fresh veggie sticks like celery, carrots, or your favorite veggies, with a delicious dip like avocado or hummus. In other words, being well prepared and having a plan is the key.
What do you recommend in the morning, since maybe most people aren't interested in, I don't know, pumpkin seeds or celery or carrots?
Absolutely, you're right. A great omelet, you know, filling it up with tons of veggies would be a great start. But if you like grains, it can be whole grains. Once again, we do want to keep in mind that each one of us is unique. So this is what we call bioindividuality in my field. So it's always good to check in with your doctor to make sure these things work for you. A hearty, you know, oatmeal can be extremely good, especially during winter months. Not only is it filling you up, and I would preferably choose the old-fashioned oats instead of quick oats, because that will keep you more satisfied, and you can add berries and so on. And also filling up with, you know, hearty soups and stews, if that's the way you want to go. But most people like eggs, so that would be my suggestion.
When you talk about eggs, are you okay with regular eggs with the yolk in them, or do you prefer egg whites, or does it not matter from a health perspective?
Thank you for asking that. I would definitely use whole eggs, and that would be the go-to because the yolks in the eggs are so amazing because they contain natural vitamin D. In fact, it might be one of the very few foods that contains vitamin D, and it's also considered a brain food because it has certain enzymes, vitamins, and minerals that I believe no other food can take its place. And egg whites are okay, but I write this in my wholeness cookbook. I do have a fantastic story because I myself used to just eat egg whites, but of course, that's in the past.
Wow. Okay, so some people point to cholesterol in eggs.
Right. And do keep in mind, I'm not a medical professional, meaning I'm neither a doctor nor a nutritionist, but I'm a health coach. Yes, but today we understand that eggs were vilified, but we understand today through evidence-based studies that a good amount of eggs and healthy proteins are essential for the body. Once again, you know, each one is unique, but generally speaking, it is an amazing food because not only is it easy to make, it's also extremely economical.
Mm. We're speaking with Asha Paul, health coach, also author of The Wholeness Cookbook. What do we do for that afternoon pick-me-up if, say, well, maybe we're feeling guilty about too many cups of coffee already during the day?
Wow, that's a great question. I love it. Yeah, my no first go-to snacks would be, again, hard-boiled eggs sprinkled with seasonings such as everything bagel seasonings, if you like, or smoked salt.
Yeah.
Yeah, or black pepper. And then, of course, coconut flakes, preferably unsweetened, sliced fruits with your favorite nut butter. And, of course, you know, filling up with healthy drinks like sparkling drinks made with fresh citrus and herbs would be a great thing. Donald, by the way, I have several free recipes on my website, ashapaul.com. So I would like to invite your listeners to check out ashapaul.com for free recipes as well as other resources.
Thanks, Asha. Asha Paul, author of the new book, The Wholeness Cookbook. Coming up next, exploring the NFL's overtime rule. Hey, thanks for joining us. Well, the greatest game in NFL history turned on a coin flip. Maybe you can debate whether last Sunday's classic between Kansas City and Buffalo was one of the greatest ever, but this is undisputable. The NFL's overtime gives an enormous advantage to whichever team wins the coin flip. More from this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Some people are okay with them. Some people hate them. We're talking about the overtime rules in the NFL. As Jay Busby of Yahoo Sports tells us, the controversy flared up again last weekend in an epic playoff game between the Bills and Chiefs. Jay, what happened at the end of that game?
Well, it was one of the greatest games in NFL history. You had two teams that are among the best in the league playing at their absolute peak, ended up with the final drive, the Chiefs tying the game with almost no time on the clock. With just 13 seconds left, they got the ball and charged all the way down to tie the game up. And we headed to overtime. And so you had these two teams that were magnificent going back and forth, and all of a sudden, only the Chiefs got the ball in overtime. The Bills never saw it again. The Chiefs won, walked off. It just was a very disappointing ending to what, up until that point, had been an absolutely great rivalry game.
What are the different rules for regular season games and playoff games in the NFL?
Well, in the regular season, a game can't end in a tie. Obviously, in a postseason, you can't end a game in a tie because somebody has to advance. So a regular season game, they will allow a game to play for an extra 10 minutes. And then if it's still tied at the end of that 10 minutes, then the game's over. But in the postseason, they go for 15 minutes. And then if they need to, they go on and on over that. But the main difference is that a postseason game will end no matter what with one team the victor.
What do statistics show us about the importance of winning the coin toss going into overtime?
It's stunning, the difference, particularly in the postseason. There have been 11, including this game, there have been 11 postseason games since this new rule was implemented, and the team that has won the coin toss has won 10 of those, gone 10-1, and seven times they have gone all the way down the field and scored without the other team touching the ball. So seven times out of 11, the game has ended without one team touching the ball.
Now, Jay, over the years, the rules have changed many times. Take us through the history of what's changed since this started.
Initially, there was a sudden death overtime where any sort of score, either a field goal or a touchdown, would end the game. Now, the NFL realized that that wasn't necessarily the most fair way to go because it's not too difficult to get into field goal range. They made it more difficult so that you had to score a touchdown to end the game. If you didn't score a touchdown, they added on a provision that you could, beyond that, the other team would get a chance to get the ball. But mainly what this has done is it tries to preserve the sudden death atmosphere while at the same time ensuring that the game doesn't go on forever, which would not be great for players' health.
We're speaking with Jay Busby of Yahoo Sports. Jay, what about the argument that, hey, the defense didn't stop the offense, so that's just the way it goes?
Yeah, that's a valid argument. That one holds a lot of weight, that you do have to do the job that you're assigned to do. The problem that I have with that is that the NFL's rules are so tilted in favor of the offense that the defense has almost no chance. They're fighting with their backs against the wall. The NFL has inexorably moved towards favoring offense, favoring quarterbacks, making it easier to score. And so when you've got that huge of an advantage, it makes it that much easier to win without even allowing the other team to touch the ball.
There's been a lot talked about this past week about this game and the ending. Is it just sour grapes from Bills fans?
I mean, Bills fans have every right to have sour grapes after losing four Super Bowls and then losing in this fashion. But I think there's a lot of people that recognize that this is just a way, it's an unbalanced sort of system. It's happened many times. It happened in the Super Bowl with the Falcons. It's happened to the Packers. It happened to the Chiefs a few years ago. The Chiefs themselves lost this way, and the Chiefs at that time were kind of grumbling about it. So everybody is okay with it until it happens to them. So I don't think that necessarily we should blame Bills fans for being a little salty about this.
Now, Jay, as we know, the college game has different rules. Some of them got a little weird this year with the two-point conversion that was endless. But what is the solution here? How can both college and football, NFL rather, fix this?
Yeah, the college one is strange because it starts to get it almost kind of like a penalty kick situation. So I don't think that that's necessarily the way to go. One solution that I've heard is that each offense gets the ball at its own 20, and so it has to drive the length of the field. And there's no clock. It's just they have the opportunity to drive the distance of the field. And if they don't do it, the other team gets the ball. And each team is guaranteed the ball. And if they can't get it done, then it's up to them. But there's no perfect solution. But I think that any solution has to start with the premise that both teams get a chance to score in overtime.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Jay Busby, writer for Yahoo Sports. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. If saving money is one of your top goals for 2022, then stop paying insane amounts of money every month for wireless. Switch to Mint Mobile. It's the easiest way to save this year. Since Mint Mobile is the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, they let you maximize your savings with plans starting at just $15 a month. At Mint Mobile, all plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Choose the amount of monthly data that's right for you and stop paying for data you never use. They've eliminated the traditional costs of retail, and you get the savings. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, visit mintmobile.com/Gordon. That's mintmobile.com/Gordon. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us on this final weekend in January. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka coming up this half hour, explaining non-fungible tokens. Also, the math behind the big NFL ratings. Plus, how to avoid being an obnoxious snowblower and cats on road trips. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, the first tweet posted on Twitter, for example, online trading cards depicting NFL tight end Rob Gronkowski winning championships. This widely visible content has become wildly valuable through the development of non-fungible tokens, or NFTs. These unique digital assets give their owners exclusive bragging rights in the digital realm, among other things. Here with an explainer is Ryan Lovelace, reporter at The Washington Times. Ryan, help us out.
So a non-fungible token is a digital certificate. It's attached to a real-world thing, you know, an image, a video, some kind of digital meme. And what this non-fungible token is that it's the certificate that can't be replicated, and it's recorded on the blockchain, which is a digital ledger. And in this way, an NFT has value in that it provides a, you know, document that shows authenticity and ownership of this particular object in the digital realm. Now, there's all kinds of disputes about whether or not and to what extent this NFT applies to the real world. There's all kinds of legal battles going on about who owns the actual intellectual property of various things. And much of that is yet to be decided. But the real, collectors, valuables, the valuability of all of this comes from some of the different things that are being turned into NFTs that NFTs are attached to, digital artwork, different things like that.
All right. So you reference in the story the singer Eminem, who owns a digital photo of a bored ape, right? That was, I believe, a meme, right? So he has this certificate of authenticity, essentially, and it means what, or like for what purpose, I guess.
Right. Well, really what it does, when Eminem buys this NFT, he then has this image of a bored ape that is uniquely attached to this NFT. So he'll display that bored ape on his social media profile to show everybody that he's part of this exclusive club, the Bored Ape Yacht Club. You might notice other folks on social media posting apes as well. And really what it does is there's some exclusive gatherings that have occurred among people that have these finite collection of apes. I believe there's 10,000 total of these digital artwork apes that are able to be kind of customized and what have you. And Eminem paid six figures for his, according to all of these different reports. And this really has turned into a big business. But effectively, it's a status symbol. It shows people that they're, it allows people to show others that they're part of an exclusive club, that they're one of only a few people that have this. And it's the kind of thing that hasn't really existed before in the digital realm, according to all of these different NFT enthusiasts, because of the way in which this new technology allows for it to be recorded as authentic in a way in the past where anyone could rip and replace the image. So while other people can, share Eminem's ape image as well, what they don't have is the NFT that says that image is particularly his.
Could I buy that, or could somebody buy that from Eminem?
If he put it up for auction, there's a number of different marketplaces. And with respect to some of these different for example, for the Bored Ape Yacht Club, they may have rules about the transferability of the different ones after they allow them out in the first place, because there only are 10,000 of these. But there are different marketplaces. One of the popular ones is called OpenSea. Earlier in January, they announced that they had gotten new funding, which had a valuation of $13.3 billion of what they're doing, which makes their co-founders multi-billionaires. And they, buy, sell, auction all NFTs anyone wants to put up there. So you could go, if you wanted to, bid on one of these Bored Ape Yacht Club Bored Apes and then place it on your social media profile, perhaps get into different venues with it, to have part of a sense of community in the digital realm with others that are doing the same thing.
Jeez. We're speaking with Ryan Lovelace, political reporter at The Washington Times. His piece is called NFTs Sizzle in Marketplace, But Their Value Draws Shrugs. All right. So you quoted a woman from Mashable who wrote, this is the tech bro version of peeing on a fire hydrant. What did she mean?
Well, I think what she's really trying to communicate is that this is effectively a status symbol. It's showing I own this, but the ownership is really something that's kind of up for debate. Anyone can make an NFT. This is something that we've seen become a problem. The film director Quentin Tarantino is going forward with trying to produce an NFT of a screenplay of one of his movies and other things to do with one of his movies. And the film studio Miramax that produced the movie is saying, well, wait a minute, that film is our intellectual property and you don't have any right to do this.
Oh, wow.
And this is one of those things where I think we're going to see a lot of interesting lawsuits unfold as to where do the intellectual property rights extend in the digital realm for this token that isn't actually anything beyond a certificate of ownership in the digital realm. So when it comes to what she's talking about, where it's the tech bro equivalent of peeing on a fire hydrant, I think what she's really saying is it's a pissing contest. It's a pissing contest for the wealthy and for the tech savvy.
That's Ryan Lovelace, reporter at The Washington Times. Coming up next, when NFL ratings erupt. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Remember all those excellent NFL divisional round playoff games last weekend? Well, as you might have guessed, close game thrillers are great for TV viewership totals, along with factors such as storylines, teams, and stars involved. As Bill Shea at The Athletic reports, the NFL got all of it last weekend. Bill set this up.
I think they got
all of their wishes granted with this past weekend. Not only did you have four great games that all came down to either overtime in the case of the Bills-Chiefs or game-winning field goals with the other three games, that always means great TV ratings. People stick around longer if it's a thriller, if it's a close game. If it's a blowout, you know, people will turn out at halftime or whatever it may be. So basically, all the stars aligned, great games, all thrillers, big TV audiences, and that's exactly what the networks and the NFL and the advertisers who spend all the money want to see. They want to see the eyeballs back to what they were before the pandemic, and that's pretty much what we were seeing.
Explain, too, because you touched on this data called out-of-home viewership. How does that work? What has that meant lately since that came about, what, a year and change ago?
Yeah, that's Nielsen's ability to measure how many people are watching at places literally outside of your home. It could be at a bar, restaurant, an office, anywhere where the embedded signal in the TV can be picked up by the portable people meters. That's what Nielsen families and those who, you know, collect the data, they wear audio signals that we can't hear embedded within TV broadcasts. And the people wearing the PPMs, if those pick those up at places like hotels, offices, or mainly other people's homes, when people gather for viewing parties and stuff, Nielsen's able to get data where they can extrapolate and figure out how many people are watching, and say, an NFL game outside of their home. And that adds about 10% to the total for a typical NFL broadcast when it comes to the TV audience. So the problem with that is we don't have those numbers prior to 2020. I mean, you can do sort of the cocktail napkin math that, you know, add 10%, and sometimes it's higher. So, it's not quite an apples to apples comparison.
We're speaking with Bill Shea, business of sports reporter at The Athletic. He's written a piece entitled "The Math Behind the Big Ratings for an Epic NFL Playoff Weekend." And as you mentioned, these games, pretty much NFL games in general, just dominating TV right now.
Yeah, absolutely. The pandemic sort of accelerated a trend in U.S. TV of people just watching less, like people in prime time. The number of people watching TV is way down. Cord cutting, we've lost like 30 million homes in the last 7 years. But NFL numbers look like none of that has happened. They just, you know, they're averaging about 17.1 million per regular season game into the playoffs, and that doubles and triples. And, you know, by the time we get to the Super Bowl, it'll probably be back to 100 million. Nothing else on television comes close to that. You know, some of the NFL premier properties charge huge amounts for advertising. We know the Super Bowl is reportedly $6.5 million for 30 seconds next month. Yeah, the championship games this weekend, I think we're well over the $1 million for 30 seconds for the AFC and NFC title games. Nothing else on TV is doing that. And then the regular season, Sunday Night Football, if you wanted to buy 30 seconds of airtime, it was over $800,000. Thursday Night Football was almost $640,000 for 30 seconds. The next closest to those two was This Is Us on NBC, and that was close to $320,000 for 30 seconds. So you just see the enormous power of the NFL and the reach, and it reaches all the demographics these advertisers want, men, women, different ages, like everybody's watching. There's nothing else like it on television.
You probably saw it. I think I saw the quote. It was like, at one point Sunday night during Bills Chiefs, 90% of the TVs on in the Kansas City area were watching that game.
Yeah, I'm in Detroit, and my TV was tuned to that. That was just bonkers there at the last couple minutes. So, I mean, the NFL couldn't have hoped for a better weekend of games, and I would posit it may be the best four-game weekend in NFL playoff history.
Thanks, Bill. Bill Shea at The Athletic. Coming up next, snowblower etiquette. Uncomfortable work attire is a thing of the past. If you're still trapped in suits and ties, make it your New Year's resolution to go casual at work. But don't dress down. Get some casual style that fits anywhere. That's what Cuts Clothing is designed for, to fit you and any occasion perfectly. That's how I feel about my t-shirts from Cuts. They look and feel great. Buttery soft. They move with me whenever I'm at the mic or at the gym. And while I could go on about their custom-engineered Pika tri-blend fabric, you really have to wear it to understand how soft it is. It's the ultimate blend of high-quality cotton, polyester, and spandex. The result is what GQ magazine calls the only shirt worth wearing. And now it's worth even more because it's an even better value. Cuts Clothing is work leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's C-U-T-S. cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon. Hey, glad you're with us. Want to keep peace in the neighborhood during a significant snowstorm like one you might be experiencing this weekend? Know the rules of snowblowers that transcend time, population density, geography, and politics. Here's a list from Chris Frieswick, humor columnist at the Wall Street Journal. The name of the column is Home Onerous. Chris, how'd you compile the list?
My father was a Swamp Yankee masshole, which means that he was born and raised. He was fourth generation in central Massachusetts, a rural farming community. There are many definitions of Swamp Yankee, and we could do a whole separate show about that. Basically, he just didn't really believe in anybody doing anything the easy way. And Swamp Yankees also have, you know, rules for absolutely everything that happens in life. And of course, this extended to the use of snowblowers. I should mention that the impending nor'easter that's about to hit the East Coast was a happy accident that my column just happened to be running the day it hits in the newspaper.
Rule number one, you said plan ahead. What's involved in that?
So that would involve making sure that you have moved every single thing out of the way of the snow blowing operation. So your children's toys, the spare beer cans that may or may not have fallen out of your car, the dog's Kong, because you do not want to see what happens to a Kong when it goes through a snowblower. It's not pretty. So basically, the other sort of non-intuitive thing that I learned from my dad is move the cars out of the garage and put them at the end of the driveway. A reader wrote in and said, that's a great idea, but make sure that the cars are right next to the sides of the driveway. So all you have to do is shove the snow off the cars into the snowbanks. The reason that you do this is so that A, you can get the snowblower out of the garage more easily since there's no cars there. B, there's less driveway area that needs to be snow blown. Mm-hmm. You also have, if for some reason your snowblower dies, your cars are already right at the end of your driveway. All you have to do is like shovel through the giant concrete hump of snow at the end of your driveway that the snowplow has thrown there. And also it frees up your garage for the snow day parties that you really should be having if you live in a blizzard hit area.
Right. Nice. We're speaking with Chris Frieswick, humor columnist at the Wall Street Journal. The column is called Homeonerous. This is a funny piece called A Jerk-Free Guide to Snowblowing. Finish up with Don't Be a Jerk.
Yeah, so this is really, really important. If you can't figure out how to set your snowblower so that that snow doesn't land on your neighbor's driveway or sidewalk, you have no business owning a snowblower. If you do blow your snow onto your neighbor's property, they're gonna know. They have to not only clear away all the naturally occurring snow, but now they have to clear away all the jerk occurring snow, and they're gonna know exactly which jerk put it there. So like, don't be a jerk. Set your snowblower or position the expeller so that it lands on your own property to the extent possible. And again, if you can't figure out how to do that, like, you just should not own a snowblower. Just go back to the shovel.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Frieswick, humor columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, cats on road trips. We'll finish with this. Lots of drivers cruise around with dogs, right? Myself included. That's a scene that often shows dogs gleefully sticking their snouts out the window. Now, many cat owners are attempting extended road trips with Fluffy for the first time, given airline hassles and other reasons. The Wall Street Journal says the problem is that cats tend to lack the canine affinity for the open road. Cats scream, are generally skeptical about moving at unnatural speeds, and don't like to be told where they can't go, such as under seats. When Sarah Schacht and her husband drove from California home to Seattle after vacation, they stopped for a hotel stay with their cat Effie, When it was time to resume the 1,200-mile journey, Effie scampered around the room before wedging herself behind the hotel bed. It took the couple and hotel staff 45 minutes to get her in her carrier. That's why some relocating cat owners or vacationers hire pros. Florida-based Blue Collar Pet Transport, which drives pets around the country, has done some 30 cat transports each of the last 2 months, about double the usual. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.